This is Don McAlevey of Eastern New Mexico. You know, when I wrote the outdoor drama Billy the Kid, now going into its fifth season in 1991, I got to dig into Billy's history pretty good and was trying to find out why a person, and especially Billy, would turn outlaw. What made him tick? Now, historians and writers will tell you one thing, and psychiatrists will tell you another. Well, I think they're all wrong. I think behind every man that turned outlaw, there was a woman. Yeah, I said woman. And I'll illustrate. I did a little poem called Make Me a Mint, explaining why this is a modern-day old fella that turned outlaw for reasons I mentioned about women. It's called Make Me a Mint. And kids out there, I don't mean candy. I mean money. So this is the way it goes. See if you don't agree with me. Some are born rich and have all they need. Some are born poor, and that includes me. Now, my gal ain't rich, but we did just fine until we moved into Clovis and met the rich kind. Now she wants me who hasn't a cent. She wants me to go and make her a mint. Make me a mint. Honey, make me a mint. I ain't asking for much, just make me a mint. Well, I ain't got the sense God gave a post. I ain't got no talent, and I'm lazier than most. I ain't got a car, and I'm behind on my rent. Now, how in the world am I going to make her a mint? Well, she says, you're going to rob a bank, and I know the very one. It's in downtown Clovis. Now, go get your gun. Well, I tried to talk her out of it. I pleaded and I cried. I said, honey, they'll catch me, and they'll tan my hide. Well, I robbed that bank just to make her a mint. She got thousands of dollars. No, wait. This is talking about Clovis. She got hundreds of dollars, and I got nary a cent. Now I'm in the pen while she's out spending every dime. The moral, my friend, is never fool with a woman with a mint on her mind. Back in March of this year, of 1990, I got invited to a cowboy poetry thing down in Roswell. And I wrote a poem called A Young Cowboy Legend. And it goes something like this. He didn't have a fine horse, but the one he had would do. He didn't have a high school education, but his young heart beat pure and true. He was raised at a time, it seems years ago, when mother, the flag, and country were all true. He was taught to work hard, to keep his word. These were the things you had to do. Then he met a young gal who he fell for hook, line, and sinker. She was the prettiest thing he'd ever seen. With long blonde hair, she was really a keeper. On Sundays, he'd ride over and pay her a call. They'd sit in the swing beneath some cool shade. He'd tell her of his cowboy dreams. And she served him cookies and sweet lemonade. He thought the courting was going just fine, but he hadn't counted on a woman's fickle heart. For one day, as he rode over to her place, what he found there gave him quite a start. There in the yard where he usually tied his horse was a two-wheeled creature of a different sort. It was a shiny red, gold metallic thing, and flip-flop with his pure and true heart. He'd seen their likes on city streets, and to him they were a terrible sight. They bellowed smoke and made such a fierce roar that horses would stampede in fright. He got back on his horse and made a nice loop with his rope, and with a quick flip of his wrist, caught that metal beast somewhere around its throat. Away he tore in a mighty cloud of dust, the metal beast bouncing here and there. Startled neighbors came out of their houses, and little kids on tricycles stopped to stare. The young cowboy looked back, and out of the house came the young girl, followed by a greasy-haired young punk who did flip-flops, backflips, and a mighty whirl. Well, about a mile down the road, the young cowboy eased up and stopped, undid his rope, took out his rifle, and finished off that metal beast with one good shot. To this day, in small towns across the state, folks still grin and talk about it yet, of the cowboy roping that mean and ugly beast and then riding off into the sunset. Now, after I did that, I wrote a one-verse sequel that goes like this. The young cowboy was brought before the law, and the stern old judge, with a mighty stroke of his pen, said, "One day in the county pokey, my boy, for litterbugging," he said with a grin. There's an old New Mexico folk poem, or some of them is made into a song, called Just Simply New Mexico. And the first three verses is traditional verses, but the rest I've added myself. It goes like this here. There is a land of dusty roads, rattlesnakes and horny toads. The dusty wind forever blows. It never rains. It never snows. How we survive, God only knows. New Mexico, we love you so. Here's my part. In Clovis' youth, men knew no law. They fought and fought till one did fall. Fire Chief Von Elm called Childers hand for setting fire to his divan. The fire it spread burned his store down. The fire chief said, "Get out of town." The town did grow while women came. They spread the word that they were game. It mattered none, two bits or four. They took the cash and hit the floor. How we survive, God only knows. New Mexico, we love you so. The girls are gone, so you do say. I bet a buck they're here today. Now 80 years have gone on by. Clovis has grown, and that's no lie. But men are men, and times don't change. They chase the skirt and pray for rain. How we survive, God only knows. New Mexico, we love you. We love you so. Now, getting back to Billy the Kid here for a minute or two, I have a version of a poem that I wrote in writing the lyrics for the music at the Caprock Amphitheater where we do my Billy the Kid. I did all the lyrics, most of them, some of them are traditional things, but this is a poem that I wrote back in, March of this year, and I used it down at Roswell. But my feeling about this whole matter of Lincoln County War is that Bat Garrett wasn't exactly a good guy or a villain, and Billy the Kid was thought to be a villain or the bad guy, but it's not the way I see it. There is another villain in the whole matter, and this poem kind of wraps up what I think about it. It's entitled, "I'll Get Them All," he said with a grin. "I'll get them all," he said with a grin, and thus the legend of Billy the Kid began. Yes, here in New Mexico long, long ago, a man's best friend was his old 44. In Lincoln County, things were getting out of hand. Tunstall and McSween had challenged Dolan and his band. Then Tunstall was murdered by the so-called law. It stirred the wind like no one had ever saw. "I'll get them all," he said with a grin, and thus the war in Lincoln County began. Not much has been said or ever seen about the part played by the greedy Santa Fe Ring. They pulled the strings, made men dance. They planned the war, left nothing to chance. In the end, McSween was dead, his home aflame. For all the killings, they said, Billy's the one to blame. Yes, fair Mexican maidens did play guitars and sing a song about Billy, their boy bandit king. Then Governor Lew Wallace promised Billy a deal. Testify against Dolan, and your charges I'll repeal. Testify Billy did, and he made his bold stand. But the Santa Fe Ring gave Wallace a slap on his hand. Now Billy had a price placed upon his head, $500, alive or plumb dead. Billy rode north, young Billy rode south, with Beaudry and Chavis and a smile on his mouth. The governor then sent for another fast man. His name was Pat Garrett, and he had a plan. And there in old Fort Sumner, Billy met his fate. The bright moon was shining, the hour was late. Shot down by Pat Garrett, who once was his friend, the young outlaw's life had now come to its end. But what is the truth about young Billy the Kid? A cold-blooded killer, or a folk hero for what he did? Follow the trail of money, and it can be seen. The real villains in truth was the Santa Fe Ring. And for you people out there that don't know what the Santa Fe Ring was, in those days they call it an organization or a group of influential people or something that control things, a ring. There's all sorts of rings. Well, the Santa Fe Ring included not only the governor, but the U.S. Attorney General, their hirelings, even the courts, even down to the sheriffs. They were people that were controlled by the powers in Santa Fe to control the economy, don't you understand? Well, Billy was caught up in all this, and he was more or less a victim, and the only one left to charge and be accused of killing people and being sentenced to hang by his neck until dead. But you know what happened to old Billy. He escaped, and later he was shot down by Pat Garrett. But that was the Santa Fe Ring. Now, follow the trail of money, and it can be seen the villain in truth was the Santa Fe Ring. Just like in Watergate, just follow the trail of money, you'll find the villains. Now, this next guy I'm going to talk about is no villain. Now, he might have broken some laws, but I don't know. He probably broke a lot of girls' hearts way back when. Now, this is called The Legend of Buddy Miller. There was a tall Texan named Miller. Yes, Buddy Miller was his name. He roared into Texas in 1921, and being the Buddy is his great fame. Like Texas itself, he cannot be corralled. He rides high, wide, and with a wild wind. 'Cause he was born of good solid stock, part Hilton, part Welch, and part Indian. He stood tall in our nation's battles, fighting side by side with other good men, securing for each and every one of us our right to live as only Americans can. Many people around Lubbock, Texas, know of this big man and his deeds. He'd give you the shirt off his back. He's generous to those with their needs. He's had his battles with tragedies too, but he's alive and always raring to go. I can't relate here all of his troubles, but losing his leg made him kind of go slow. Buddy Miller is my oldest cousin. He's given me laughter, a bit of teasing, but he's been through war and hell. God has given him life for some good reason. My hat off to you, Buddy Miller. This summer, about in June, I was invited down to the Cowboy Symposium in Lubbock, Texas, sponsored by the ranch heritage outfit down there that has done a lot of things, and especially for Texas and that part of the country. I did several things down there, a couple of them I just read you. And this past, about 2 weeks ago, I was invited down to Hobbs for the second annual cowboy poetry, ballads and songs, and they paid $75 for coming down. First time I'd been paid for reading or reciting poetry, and there is a little money in it, very little, but it paid some expenses. And I wrote especially for this thing in Hobbs the other day, a poem, an epic poem, it's longer than most of my stuff, but it's about another Bill, not Billy the Kid now, but this is one of the greatest Bills that ever lived, and I call him one of the greatest cowboys who ever lived, and I'm speaking of old Pecos Bill. Pecos Bill is strictly New Mexico, so pay attention here. Little is known of the true historical facts of Pecos Bill. Fathered by a liar, he was born on the Texas-Arkansas line. His mother, bless her heart, was a big-hearted pioneer woman. At age 3 days, he was weaned by her on bad-tasting moonshine. Attacked by savage Indians, his paw was scalped bone naked. But his mother, bless her heart, took broom handle in one hand and slew 45 of the best of those Chickasaw warriors while shooing flies off young Bill with her turkey feather fan. The widowed mother, bless her heart, took her 16 or 7 kids west, and while crossing the muddy Pecos River in peaceful New Mexico, rambunctious young Bill fell off the burden wagon unnoticed, and his family didn't miss him for 4 or 5 weeks, not until they reached Socorro. By then it was too late to try and find him. And that's how Bill came to live with the coyotes among the Pecos. He learned their language and sat on hills and howled at night. Being so young when he was lost, he came to think he was a coyote, and he learned to kill deer by running them to death on sight. When 10 years old, a cowboy came along and wondered out loud, "What in tarnation you mean by running and starting naked like a varmint?" "Why? Because I am a varmint," Bill told him right back. And the cowboy almost believed him when he got wind of his scent. But the doubtful cowboy argued that Bill was a human, that a human he was. Bill wouldn't believe him, saying, "Ain't I got fleas? And don't I howl at night like a respectable coyote should do?" "All Texans have fleas, and most howl," the cowboy teased. "Why, you ain't got no tail. Ever see a coyote without a tail? That proves beyond a reasonable doubt you ain't the varmint kind. Circle yourself around and look at your blistered bare behind." Sure enough, Bill looked behind himself, and a tail he did not find. "Well," Bill astonishingly admitted, "I never noticed that before. Just shows what a higher education will do for a man. You're right. Lead me to them humans and I'll throw in with them. I've had enough of fleas and scratching in this hot sand." Well, to town Bill was led, where he stared wide-eyed at the women, and before long he was enjoying the pleasant vices of mankind. He got to running with a wicked and wild bunch of human bunch of cusses, and sunk lower and lower until finally he became a cowboy. It wasn't long until Bill was a famous bad man. He invented the six-shooter, train robbing, and other popular crimes just for fun. No telling how many men Bill did kill, but deep down Bill had a tender heart. He never killed women and children or tourists out of season. It was while Bill was staking out New Mexico for his own that he found a young colt that he raised on a mix of nitro and bundles of dynamite. You should have seen that horse sunfishing, backflipping, and sidewinding. Only Bill could ride that bronc named Widowmaker, but only after an all-day fight. The Stake Plains used to be heavily overgrown with timber, up to the time Bill put on Widowmaker a gal to carry. They tore up the earth from Clayton clear down through Hobbs and beyond. knocking down all those trees and leaving it as it appears today, just bald prairie. Yes, Pecos Bill's love affairs are legend, but only one gal that he really loved. And here you folks might want to take out your hankies and prepare to cry because of the sad tale of the fate of this gal that he desired to marry. She was Slewfoot Sue, a famous rider who had caught Bill's roving eye. It was on their wedding day that Sue made her fateful mistake. She insisted on riding Widowmaker while decked out in her wedding gown. In those days, women wore them steel spring bustles. It somehow was the fashion. Bill's horse threw her so high that she had to duck to let the moon go round. Well, when Sue lit, she naturally bounced, and every time she bounced again. It was an awful sad sight to see Bill imploring her not to be so nervous. But she kept right on, up and down, weeping and throwing Bill kisses, and carrying on as a bride naturally would do under them circumstances. She bounced 3 days and 4 nights, and to keep her from starving to death, Bill had to shoot her. A tragic death Bill never got over inside. Of course, he married lots of women after that. It was his one weakness. But none could fill her place in his heart once held by his bouncing bride. Many claim that it was Bill's drinking habits that finally killed him. But the truth is that he met a dude from Mo Boston one day, wearing a mail-order cowboy outfit and asking fool questions about the West. Poor old Bill just lay down and plumb laughed himself to death, passing away. And thus ends this true story of Pecos Bill's life, believe it or don't. Now I want to put on here some of the songs, the lyrics of which I wrote for Billy the Kid.
Life is spent. thinking of right this terrible wrong. Am I heaven bound or hell sent? I can't turn my back on him. Like a father, Tunstall was to me. I must avenge this wrongful death, or my whole life is just a mockery. Oh, mother, please help me. What is the right trail to ride? Do I follow my aching heart?
Here then is a recording of Come Dance With Me, Billy. This was the first song I wrote for the outdoor drama. And I did it back in 86 I wrote the play. And I kind of had in mind what kind of a tune, but Harold Kilmer was over one day on the piano. He kind of picked out the melody just like I had imagined. So I give him credit for the melody, but the song here is being done in 87 by the cast at the amphitheater. Pay attention.
Just forget the bruise of my fall.
That was sung by our first leading lady, Jane McNulty. I have to give credit here for the music, the instrumentation. Mainly originated by Larry Buchanan, who plays guitar, he plays fiddle and mandolin, but he has written most of the music for the play, the original music. Now, I can't say enough about the little girl that did most of the violin music, the fiddle music, and that was Valerie Moss of Amarillo, Texas. I'd like to finish up this tape with kind of a theme song. The music we use, we've called it the Legendary Song, but it originated back when we did Dream on a Blue Horse in 86. That was the only thing that I picked up from that show that I thought was, that I liked, would like to see in my play Bill the Kid. It's an instrumental. It's created and written by a Tootencary fiddle player, a champion fiddle player named Hiram Posey. And he was up on the Conscious Lake one night camping, and this came to him, and he come home and he put it to music. It's an eerie, haunting type song, but it's very fitting for the tragedy of Billy the Kid.